Let's go! 3, 2, 1!
Welcome to another episode of Functional Fundamentals. I'm Dave.
I'm Mike.
I'm Brad.
And today we're going to talk about the power of positivity. The positive thinking, positive affirmations, surrounding yourself with positive people, and then kind of identifying what positivity is versus what, like, maybe like someone who's a little too idealistic, less realistic. So we want to kind of draw a line in the sand as far as that is, and then maybe touch on some of the pitfalls of like negativity, like the negative reinforcement versus positive reinforcement.
Yeah, you see that. I mean, I see that a lot. Excuse me, a lot in sports where, depending on the athlete, where if you tell an athlete you did horrible today, you suck, you're not any good, they'll go out and work harder to try to prove their coach wrong or prove whoever they
said. Yeah, out of spite.
Out of spite, kind of thing. And then there's another form of it where you do that to the same athlete, you do that to a different athlete, and it just crumbles them. So it's kind of like you have to know the individual. Some individuals strive off of proving people wrong, and when someone says you did a bad job, they're going to make sure they don't hear that again. And the other part of the person is they're like, you did good today. Let's work on these little things to do better. It kind of, there's no right and wrong.
Because me, I'm personally, as far as like in a sports setting, I need positive reinforcement. I do not like negative reinforcement. I don't want to be broken down. And that's probably because for the longest time I dealt with a negative inner voice. So I didn't want a negative. I dealt with a negative internal voice, so I didn't want to deal with a negative external voice the entire time either. Like, I don't want to deal with that. And I've always viewed, like, working out and stuff, like, it's a team setting, whether that be, like, you and your coach. But it's a team effort, even if it's just you working, because someone's training you. So you don't, like, I view them as a member of my team. Like, they should be pushing me to do better. Like, why are they yelling at me? Why are they being mean?
See, I see. I had both sides of it. I've been there before, where I've had a coach when I was playing baseball basically tell me, and I'll never forget this story, I'd be better off if the team took me out behind the dugout and beat me to death with baseball bats. Actually said that. And then one other time when I was playing pro ball, the guy said, "I can't believe we wasted money on you." Things like that.
That's super mean and hurtful. Yeah. Hurtful words are hurtful.
Yes, it was. And I looked at it as, you guys are, I mean, at first I was like, wow, I can't believe you just said that. And my idea is, okay, they're telling me I'm doing something wrong, I need to do better. So my coach, like, doesn't want to beat me to death with baseball bats, and so they should feel grateful that they're paying me, not...
Yeah.
But I've also seen the other way, where I'm learning a new task. Like, when I learned how to fight, free tag, he was awesome with it. He never said, you're doing it horrible, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
He was, you know, you're doing all right, but you need to do more of this, try these little tasks, and I improved very, very quickly. And I think he knew
that... Free tag down in Grove City. Yeah. Jiu-Jitsu is a fantastic example of, like, positive reinforcement.
Yeah. He never belittled you. He never beat you down. He always said, okay, you're doing good, but let's try this. You can do better. He always pushed me to do better. He never said, you're doing so bad, I'm going to have everyone on the team beat you up. He never did that kind of thing. And I think that helped me the most to become better in that aspect. But I guess it's just different how different coaches go. I think individually, like, say, for fighting, I think the positive reinforcement is better to say, you're doing good, we can do better and better and better, because it's just you out there.
Yeah.
In a team, I see more of the team where it's more the negative, because it's like you're letting your team down. Pick your stuff up and help your team.
So it's more like being aware of, like, what's on the line and stuff, as far as, like, when the negative reinforcement's used. I could see that. And then with combat sports, you have to be very, like, if someone doesn't have realistic expectations, you need to give them a little, and that's where, like, the whole positivity, like, that's that weird line is, like, positivity is great, but as long as it's paired with realistic expectations. Mm-hmm. Because if it's just pure positivity and they get in there and they get punched in the nose and they've never been punched in the nose before, then all that positivity does nothing for them, because then it's like, oh crap, I don't know what I'm doing. But if you have, like, realistic expectations and you pair it, that's great. When you don't have those realistic expectations, and maybe someone just doesn't have that experience, that's when you use a little bit of the negative reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
But not a bunch. Like, just a little bit. Just enough to like, yo, give that reality check. Like, hey, like, I'm just to let you know, like, if things go bad, like, you're going to get hurt.
And that's kind of how Freak Tag
and I don't want you to get hurt.
Well, that's kind of how he did it was, you know, I told him I wanted to compete. He goes, all right, well, you're getting better. But I felt like I was like a little fawn about to walk. He goes, okay, little guy, let's go put you in the ring and see how you can do with somebody that knows what they're doing. Yeah. And we'll see how you do afterwards.
And then you're in the savannah and a lion's chasing you.
Yeah, down. And basically it was, that's kind of what it was. Let's feed you to the wolves or feed you to the lions. And if you walk out smiling, we know you can go to the next level. And that's kind of how it was. And that's what we did.
He
didn't say no, don't do it. He goes, all right, if you want to do this, I'm going to take your hand.
This is what's going to happen. I need to make sure you're on board. Because when you both have realistic expectations, when you know what's going to happen, when you know the pitfalls, like, of not really putting it all in, you can build that trust more.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And to touch base on the realistic thing, think about a fighter, MMA, whatever. And they keep training and fighting and losing and keep fighting and losing.
Sometimes, but then they just have someone pause them in the corner. Oh, yeah, like, yeah. Blah, 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 you're doing great. No, obviously
he threw water
not.
In your eyes.
You can't. You see that more so in amateur boxing than you do any other sport where you have these people. And I don't think they're being positive just to be positive. I think they're maliciously being positive. And
yes,
they're making money off amateur fights, setting them up in casinos, ticket sales, and things like that. And not giving them a realistic feedback like, hey, this isn't for you, or like, we've lost a lot, maybe you can't fight under me unless you do X, Y, and Z. So I think there's a lot of dangers in being just super positive all the time in that realm. But I think a lot of people in the combat sports have a strong internal drive to where maybe they don't need someone who's strictly negative or positive. There's somewhere in between we'll do. And regardless of what you say, they're probably going to do it anyway just because they're strong internal drive.
Yeah, yeah.
Outside of sports, though, what I've come to realize is thoughts trigger emotions.
Yep.
So that's like the bottom line. So if you have a negative thought, they can have a negative emotion or negative consequence. If you have a positive thought, they can lead positive consequences, and they can change your mood up and down depending on what your internal self-talk is. So back to having a fine line of, like, you want to be mostly positive to yourself and kind and loving to yourself, but at the same time, you can't be in this idealistic realm of nothing's ever negative and not being aware of things that are actually negative and harmful, because then it's a survival mechanism. You have to be like, this was bad, this hurt me, or this is negative, mm-hmm. I need to stay away from this. So I would want to be like 3/4 positive with the 1/4 negative of like, okay, this is bad. You know, I still need that.
Yeah, and I think that's just a matter of being realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird to like distinguish between like the negativity and the realistic.
Mm-hmm.
But having that like, I don't know, like benchmark to go back to, like, exactly like you said, like, this was bad. I don't want to experience this anymore. Mm-hmm. But like, having those realistic expectations, those experiences that you can draw back on. But yeah, positivity is great, but as with anything, it needs to be in moderation. Like, and then that's where the whole like realistic expectations come into play.
True. Yeah, and I think that people get caught up a lot of it when they try to give positive, negative reinforcement. A lot of them go back to the aspect of the old style coaching where it's, You're wrong, do it this way, do it this way. And Brad was right. When it comes to sports, it's a different type.
Yes.
And, again, I was always thought, and I don't really like to yell and scream at individuals. I try to guide them the right way. And I think in a team aspect, it's easier, like I said before, it's easier to be negative because it's like you're letting your team down.
Yeah, well, it's the negativity comes out more in a accountability thing.
Well, just think about how much, because we've all said before, when we train, I work harder, and I know you guys work harder when you're working in a team.
Yeah, because you don't want to let the team down.
Right,
yeah.
And I think that's easy to push yourself, because it's like, it's not me, it's these guys.
Yeah.
Now, when it's yourself, if I keep telling you, Dave, you're doing a horrible job, you can't do this, you can't do that, and it's you're the only one you have to listen to and talk, and kind of have to be reliable to, it's easy to be like, you know what, screw it. I don't even do this.
My expectations are like, oh, okay, I'm going to fail no matter what. Like, why am I doing this?
Right. And no one, you're not holding anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're holding the, you know, Brad and I, and it's a team thing, and if you fail, we all fail, it's harder for you to say, you know what, I can't quit because I'm letting these guys
down. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are easier to say, I'm done, when I'm the only one that gets punished before, yeah. towards mm-hmm. the other day.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really, well, just like, excuse me, working out alone is harder than working out with either a coach or a partner.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you always want to find like a gym buddy.
Yeah.
Well, it's easier. It's easier to say like, it's easier to start like a new habit as well, or try something new with someone else.
Yep.
Because it's like, oh, I don't want to let this person down. And, you know, they're committing to it as well. But like, say I want to go try something scary by myself. Like, I want to go skydiving. That scares the crap out of me. It's terrifying. If I were to do it by myself, I'd be like, ooh, like, at any point, I could be like, nah, I'm good. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm out the deposit or something, you know, whatever. Right. But if I sign up with you or Brad, I'm like, you know, we kind of go halvesies on the deposit, whatever. I've never been skydiving. I have no idea. I'm just kind of assuming there's a deposit.
There is.
But, yeah, we go in there. I'm like, oh, I don't want to let these guys down. I don't want their experience to be, like, I don't want them to be bummed out because of me. So you're more likely to go through with it.
Right. Well, look at today's example. We had that group today we worked with. They did good overall. But when we had them in the circuit, you know, you look around, some of them are dogging, some are kind of just going through the motions.
Yeah.
They're working hard, but they're not working.
Because it was a bunch of individual stations, and they weren't necessarily...
If they do bad on that station, it's...
The only pressure was on the timer.
Yeah.
Each time.
And, yeah, they're going... The rest of them are kind of taking their time, talking. And they weren't doing a bad job, but you could tell they were tired. They weren't pushing themselves to the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Then we put them on the skier.
Then all of a sudden, everything picked up.
Yep. So now we put them all as a team, and they had to do a skier a certain amount of meters in a certain amount of time, and they all...
And they did fantastic today.
Yeah, great.
Actually,
but
proud of
not them. One person slacked on it. They were just killing it the entire time. And it's because David said it, you know, if I do bad, I'm not getting punished. Everybody's getting punished. So no one wanted to have that on their shoulders. Like, I don't care if I'm bad. I don't care how, you know, horrible I'm doing. I'm going to do as best I can because I can't let these guys down. I think that's a lot when it comes to, you know, negative reinforcement is you take the weakest link and say, you're letting them down. You got to do a little better because if you fail, we all crumble. And then you use the positive reinforcements when they're only beholden to themselves because you don't want that individual realizing, I have to go to war by myself. I can't have any doubt,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of thing. And I don't know. I could be completely off base, but I see those things working differently.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree as far as, like, it like you little dashes of negativity. And it's not, I don't even think it really, it's negativity. It's just more like accountability.
We're not attacking you, we're attacking what you're letting down.
Yeah. We're like, yo, like...
It's a feedback loop.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, when I played sports, I felt like I worked harder when the coaches pointed out that if you don't do this, we're going to lose, the team is going to lose.
Yeah.
You're letting the team
and
down.
It's an awareness thing, too. Like, you need to be aware of, like, how crucial you are to the bigger
picture. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when I was fighting, I didn't feel any negativity. If I had a bad kick, bad punch, bad takedown, it wasn't like, you're horrible, you're getting your ass kicked. It was, let's work on this. Let's work on this. Let's work on this.
Absolutely.
You're doing good, but you could do better. It was, and I think that's, you know, if again, a free tag said, you're horrible, someone's going to kill you, I might be a little intimidated and be like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to die. You know?
I agree.
But, yeah.
Especially in the ring.
Right. So I get in there, and I'm like ding, ding, ding. I go touch the hands. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to die.
It's like, whoa, did you hear about that Mike guy? We listen to his podcast. He's dead.
He's dead. He fought Dolph Lundgren, and he killed him over in Russia.
Oddly enough, Dave Bray did not kill him.
Yeah,
he died in the ring.
Oddly enough, yeah.
I'm going to get you.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren killed me. After he killed me as he was doing the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Click, 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 click. Snap neck. Click, 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 click.
He's so smart and handsome and athletic.
Tall?
Yeah, and tall.
Was he like 6'4"?
I don't know, man. He's just blessed.
Dolph Lundgren, if you're listening to this...
Hashtag blessed.
Yeah. We'd like you to be part of our podcast. I just want him to go like this. You're going to... Or, I will break you.
I must break you.
We need to get him on the podcast.
You're good.
I'll make a couple calls.
You will lose.
Is this the unrealistic positivity? Like, yeah, let's get him on the podcast.
Yeah, I think it'd be...
Let's do that.
Totally
he seems like a nice guy.
He'll do it.
He'll do it. I mean...
He likes to give back.
Right.
Write it off as a charitable.
Mm-hmm. I think he'd be great. But if he does show up, I'm wearing my Rocky gear.
If he shows up, I'm
be like, you killed Apollo! What'd you say?
Yeah, true.
I don't think he'd like that too much. I just remember, like, you will do. If he dies, he dies. Best lines.
So we talked about it.
The end, at the end, we'll just have him say that.
Yeah, he dies. He dies. You're like, thank you. All right, Dolph.
So in a sports setting, we kind of identified. So, and then as far as like teams versus individual, but like everyday person, just normal mindset, I believe should be positive.
Yes, because I think that's more like a fighter's aspect. It's individual. You're not beholden to anybody.
Yeah.
So whether it be, if you attack someone saying you're bad at this, bad at this, bad at this, eventually they're going to believe it, and they're never going to strive to be better.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm already bad at it. Why don't I just do something else?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like, oh, I'm bad at this. I need to do better so I can help out these people.
No, if it's just yeah, it's me. Just like, doesn't affect me. Whatever. I'm bad at it. Why am I wasting time?
I'm just going to move on.
Yeah.
So with that, from what you just said, though, if you have friends or partners and you're negative, you're tearing them down. If you're positive, you're building them up. Because you just said if you have a negative mindset that you can't achieve your best potential. So if we are friends, it's not in my best interest to bring you down, because as a whole, you guys affect me because we're friends and mm-hmm. in a group and interact. So it's in my best interest, my own, if I'm being really selfish, to even be positive and help you be more positive and help you be more positive.
Yeah, because we're going to help build each other
up.
Yeah.
But we've talked about this before, about how some people, their ideals on friends or just life in general is to be the alpha or the top of the mountain to a group of individuals.
And that's
if I keep pushing you guys to do better, that means I have to work harder.
And that's where, like, as far as, like, priorities and ego come into play.
Mm-hmm.
But in, like, a general, let's assume everybody, like, wants to be best. Because we're talking about, like, yourself. Like, me personally, like, I want to be positive. I want to strive to the best. I want to pursue my physical, my mental, my emotional mastery. And I absolutely want the people around me to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
It upsets me to see someone not trying to realize their potential. And I think that's just where I'm at today. If you asked me, if I were to kind of speak on that same issue 5 years ago, it might have been different because I was very negative. I had a lot of negative self-talk. Even a year ago when we started working out, it was always a lot of, like, negative. I was like, you know, I don't know if I – it went from, like, nah, man, I can't do that. I'll just deal with the punishment to, you know what, like, I'm going to try, but I'm not sure. And then now to, you know what, I'm going to go for it. Like – today, you're like, we're going to modify this for you, Dave. And I was just like, fine, whatevs, like, don't care. Like, you're like, this is going to be harder. I was like, okay, let's do it. We're going to do this now. Okay, let's do it. Like, just.
And I gave you the number, and Dan's like, crap. And you're just like, okay.
I was like, fine, let's do it. Like, what's, like, am I going to die? No, I'm going to push myself. And if I don't meet it, well, I'm going to deal with the repercussions. And then next time, I'm going to try to meet it. Like, it's just, and I'm looking at it as, like, you don't have, I don't think about, like, the larger picture or the small, like, individual instance. I'm looking at the larger picture. I'm like, okay, if I don't get it this time, I'm going to try to do it next time. Because I found, like, a lot of one of the main keys to my personal happiness is progression.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be, like, physical, mental, emotional, my relationships, my career. As long as I'm making some sort of progress towards one of my goals, I'm happy. Because it's not about, to get, like, cliche as shit, it's not about the end, like, mm-hmm. goal. It's about the journey. But so as long as I'm making some sort of progress, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm at my worst when I'm, like, I feel like I'm making no progress in any sort of aspect of my life.
Right.
I feel, like, complacent. I'm like, no, like, I need to be going for something. You get kind of stir crazy.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And just as you had a paradigm shift with maybe 5 years ago, 1 year ago, like, making that progression, one thing I've also realized is, you mentioned on Alpha Male and Leader of the Pack, like, I've noticed I want to stay away from people like that. And the reason I've made a conscious effort to do that is because they view life in a ladder format where they got to get ahead and get over people.
Very competitive.
Competitive. And, you know, you can be competitive in different circumstances. But when we're talking about everyday life, I don't want to be around people that view a progression of people's self-worth of, like, this is a guy's better than me and I'm better than this person. And it's a ladder format. I'd rather have either everyone's on the same line and have their own unique gifts and skill set, or we're all sort of one. We're kind of the same.
Yeah.
Because we come from the same planet.
Mm-hmm.
We're the same species. We have the same reality.
Yeah, and so, we have all these unique experiences, and we should be trying to learn from each other.
Yeah.
But I completely agree. I don't – those type of people, they instantly, like, kind of turn me off.
Yeah, as soon as I hear people talk about, like, oh, I want to be alpha this, or I'm leader of the pack, or this, that, it's like a red light, red flag. Like,
yeah, I'm saying,
we are not on the same level.
You do your thing. I'm going to be over here.
Yeah. It's almost like they have a – they're coming from a sense of insecurity. And to feed that insecurity, they have to try to be leader or the first or the best at this or best at that to fulfill this void that's never going to be ultimately fulfilled through that, because they're not at peace with themselves and who they are. So that was my paradigm shift, just like Dave had his of, okay, I don't want to be around those type of people. They do not match up with my mental model and who I want to become ultimately as I'm progressing mentally and emotionally and physically. That just doesn't go well with my mental philosophy. So
yeah, I could not agree more.
And see, I take what you said, and I had to morph my ideal thinking because I was that type of person is, you know, I'm going to lead, I'm going to take everyone I can, I'm going to lead us to the promised land kind of thing. And I've changed my thinking a little bit because I realized I still want to lead a group of people for, you know, I've already told you guys, my whole idea is to try to help as many people as possible to live long and prosper, you know.
Yeah.
To quote Spock.
Yeah. Yeah. But then just being around you guys and just doing more and more research, I've realized I still can be that leader, but I can't be the one-stop shop. Like, I don't know probably in the last year how many people and how many questions I've asked about you with nutrition because I know something, but you know more. And it's very easy for me to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea about the alpha male is they think they know everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah,
you can't up on them and I can't up on them because it's like, you know, I'm the alpha. I know everything. I know more than you and you. And I'm not trying to say I know everything. I know a little bit here and a little bit there, but I know when I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that I'm going to not move my path of trying to help as many people as I can. But I think having you guys around, having you in the circle, and having you guys as references, it's helping me become a better individual. Thus, I'm bringing you with me. It's not like I'm trying to keep you below me. It's like, if you surpass me, great. I can say I was a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I helped him get where he has. And that's, and to me, that's going to be better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the better you do, the better I do. And it's not like, it's not a pissing contest and like, oh, he has this, I have that. It's... we helped each other. We've accomplished something great, and we did it together as a team.
Yeah.
If he surpasses me, that's fine because I'm still going to be happy. I'm still going to be in the term of successful.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people, like you said, they try to one up each other.
Yeah.
It's like if I have 3 Skittles, well, I'm going to take 4.
Yeah, and I think I don't even know if this is a terminology, but co-evolving is what I just popped in my head because
trademark.
Trademark. Because if I am getting better in all these different aspects, I still only have 24 hours in the day. I still only have a certain amount of days in my lifetime. I have to be very picky and choosy what I spend my time doing. Yeah. And I can't, like you said, I can't do everything. Mm-hmm. So let's say you choose to put all your time and effort and develop your natural gifts and talents towards exercise science, physical rehab, strength conditioning, whatever it is. That's what you're spending your time on. I like that stuff, but that's not what I'm going to spend my time on. So as you're evolving, I can use your life skills and life lessons and not spend all the time you're spending
it
and learn from that.
What you're doing.
Yeah, so we're both co-evolving.
Absolutely.
And we can bring more people in and co-evolve together. And where that breaks down is we can become better as a species and better as a community, but we don't have that because people are competing against each other and trying to tear them down or discredit other people. And they don't sit back and look at the big picture. We only have a certain amount of time. I have this interest. I have this skill. Let me develop this. You develop yours, and we'll use it within each other.
Yeah, because now, like you talked about the idea of what we're going for in another dimension, let's say. Mike's doing that same thing, and you go, you know what? I could probably do that better. So then you're sitting there competing against each other, and what do you get out of it?
It's not efficient use of time or energy.
Yeah, rather than supplementing each other to benefit, like, to everybody benefit. Because it's funny, because I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and I was like, yo, like, and I was like, and I said, like, my skill, I was like, I don't necessarily have a special skill. Like, I don't know, like, everything about one thing. I go, but I know someone who does, or I know how to find it. I was like, I can help find that information, find an expert. Like, I'm good at that. I'm good at finding someone else who knows what you need to find out. Like, I'm making those connections. Mm-hmm. Kind of like point A to point B. I was just like, you know what? Like, it's funny. Like, someone will mention something. I go, you know what? I might know somebody. Mm-hmm. And in that, and I think that, for me personally, has been great because then I view, like, all these social interactions, all these relationships completely different mm-hmm. than I used to in the past. Because in the past, I mean, not that far off, I definitely was more grumpy, and I was dealing with a lot of internal issues, but I projected them outward. So I would view these relationships as, like, throwaway relationships, burning bridges and stuff, because I was like, well, they don't do anything for me right now. Like, why am I even associating with that person? Whereas now I look at it like a golden opportunity. Like, okay, maybe I don't get anything immediate from this person. They don't get anything immediate from me. But what am I losing by making a connection? Because you never know where that door may lead.
Right.
It could lead to an awesome, like, maybe it leads to something simple, like an awesome conversation with someone else for an evening. And that conversation doesn't lead anywhere, but it was just a great conversation. And those are fun to have. And you look at it in the instances, and, you know, I walked away from that experience. I had it was fulfilling. I had a good conversation. It was a good interaction, and it won't lead anywhere. But maybe something else, it's the same thing, except for it does lead to something. Mm-hmm. And they go, you know what, I might know a person that is similar to you, and they get along, and, you know, it could lead to something, a career advancement, a romantic development, like anything.
Mm-hmm.
So viewing those like that.
Absolutely. And I think the weird thing about life that I've noticed, like, when you're born, it's not like you have this unique talent, like, oh, this child has this gift.
Yeah.
It's through all of our trials and problems and things that we start experiencing these, and these talents and gifts starts coming
something's
out.
Something's going to resonate with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I've noticed I'm handling this problem better than most people, or I've tackled this challenge and overcome this better than other people, because a lot of people, I don't believe, know what their true talent or gift is, and maybe it's not apparent because you have to go through this process of problems and challenges, and also you have to put in the work. I mean, I'm sure, Mike, you weren't naturally gifted at 5 years old at exercise science and strength and conditioning. You had to work and put in the education and work with clients, and you had to make that your talent and gift. You had to put in the work.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, you have to put in the work to find out what your talent is, but I think, you know, as a whole, we need to help each other find it out, because it's self-serving. Even if I'm the most selfish person, it's still in my best interest to have you at your best and you at your best.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we weren't friends, as a community, it serves no one to have anyone disenfranchised, essentially.
Right.
So.
Well, it kind of brings a point. Something about how what happened today with you is we're working on an athlete today, and they're complaining about issues with their hip and stuff like that. And as we're working on them, they actually asked you, like, so is this what you're going to start doing now? To you. And you're just like, nah, I'm learning. And every once in a while, actually it's pretty much on a weekly affair now, you'll tell me, hey, I worked with this one person, they were complaining about this. I did these little tests that you showed me and they work. Mm-hmm. And I did this person and they're feeling better and feeling better and feeling better. So it's now you're like another one of, you're building the circle.
Yeah, I like it because I'm not trying to do what you do. But it's nice because I can take your philosophies, your principles, your ideals, and I can just show people a little snippet. I'm like, hey, like, this is what I've learned just kind of through osmosis, essentially, in a little bit of focused listening. I go, and I'll kind of talk about the principles and stuff like, this is why, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, wow, like, who'd you learn this from? Mike. So then, like you said, expands the social circle. Because then they're like, oh, this is great. And then they pass it along to somebody.
Right.
And they pass it along to somebody.
But
and
you're getting to the point now, though, that you can actually take the helm with somebody. Again, a couple weeks ago, we did that assessment with the individual. And you kind of saw everything I saw. You may not have saw it as quick, but you saw it.
Yeah.
Like when I said, okay, we're going to do this, you're like, ah, okay, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing.
And I loved it because I was able to learn. I was able to, like, it's not like I'm trying to, and the thing is, it's not like I'm trying to be better at what you're doing. But I'm able to take that, and it's supplementing what I already know. Because I've been in combat sports for nearly a decade. Mm-hmm. So, and then now I'm able to kind of bridge the gap between, like, normal, like, exercise science and, like, the combat sports. Because it's like, yo, I know what these people, these combat athletes go through. And then I'm learning this stuff. And I was like, hey, like, let's meet somewhere here in the middle.
But if you do know more than I do, and you do surpass me, I'm okay with that. Because I helped you get started.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you're like my young Padawan. Like, I'm, you know, I'm Obi-Wan and you're...
You're not Yoda? You're not riding on my back?
No, you're Luke.
I'll write on your back.
Yes. But you know what I'm saying? I can understand when we talked about the whole negative and positive thing is so many people are afraid of being surpassed by someone that they thought was beneath them.
Yeah, it's like, oh, no. And like, saying, I need to, like, keep all this knowledge to myself. Like,
it's an insecurity, selfish, like, ego thing, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, again, I hate to keep harping on this subject. I think it's losing sight of the big picture and not understanding truly how interconnected we are.
Yeah, as a society, as a species.
Yeah.
Like, we need to be progressing towards positivity.
Yeah.
Towards, like, as a species, we need to be growing. We should not be fighting amongst ourselves.
No, absolutely not. The olden days of, like, these religions are fighting, or these political systems are fighting, mm-hmm. or this social, economic issue and disparities, it makes no sense. I think we're coming to an age where, through the internet and mass communications, where we're like, oh no, there's a tsunami here, let's help them.
Yeah.
Or we're getting to the point, even with the global change, like, oh, all these 200 nations meeting together to solve this one big problem.
Yeah.
Like, that is becoming more apparent. Like, oh, look what we can do if we work together.
Right. And that's honestly the truth.
That's how we need to be.
Yeah.
If we want to, honestly, if we want to survive as a species,
mm-hmm.
that's what's going to happen. If that doesn't happen, we will die out.
For sure. 100%.
Absolutely.
And we'll either cause it through nuclear war,
yep,
or global change,
yep,
or disease, you know.
Yeah, we will die out if we do not work together.
And that's the key. We have to be able to work together. And the problem with a lot of working together is the financial aspects to it, I think. And that's a negative but a positive sign to it. And I wish I was financially stable enough where I could give all the information I have away for free. I wish I could train everyone I wanted for free, because I would love to be able to do that. But I can't on the financial aspect that I need to charge my services to survive.
Yeah.
And that email you wrote the other day to a potential athlete, I thought the information was great. And you asked me, was this too much? Well, for free, yeah. The information was phenomenal. I mean, I thought it was phenomenal information. But, and to be honest, I would love to get that information to everybody if I could. But on an aspect of that's your livelihood, you might want to shorten it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But what you did is the same thing I used to do. I gave too much information out, and people didn't come to my services anymore because, like, well, if I ask them a question,
why buy the cow if I got the milk for free?
Right, the kind of thing. So I've learned, and I think you're the same aspect of me, is I don't want to hide the information. I don't want to keep it hidden in a locked safe somewhere. I want everyone in the world to know it, but until I'm financially able to do that, I'm going to have to give little snippets here and there and have a small little army that pays for it.
Yeah.
And I understand people are like, well, you should be able to give it all away for free for this and that. But
we're also in
we're in a capitalistic
society.
That's
what I was about to say.
Yeah.
We're in a capitalistic society. We only have this experience in the United States to speak of. Like, and that may bring up a bigger question that I'm absolutely not prepared to answer, but like, is a capitalist society the ideal society when you look at the world, the species, and stuff like
that? Mm-hmm. I like the thought of that idea a lot because I'm like you, Mike. I like that. I want to give it for free. Not only that, think about the possibilities for a second. If every person in this country or in this community had the time and effort and luxury to develop and hone their own gift and skill and be able to give that for free.
Yeah.
That would be insane.
Absolutely. And they didn't have to worry about, like, their living expenses.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. And that would be crazy. Just think, as a species, how great we would be.
Yeah.
And I think that's something in my life that, as I try to hone my greatest potential, I want to try to challenge that idea and
mm-hmm.
see if I can make that more of a reality.
Here's my negative approach to that, or the what-if factor.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned about a year ago that you used to do it like once a month or something. You'd go and give free nutritional plans and
mm-hmm.
nutritional advice to people, and no one ever show up.
Mm-hmm.
I've done the same thing. I've done free fitness evaluations to people. People didn't show up. But once we put a price tag on it and someone paid it, people showed up. We had more people know what to do with.
That's also in a capitalist society.
Right. But the whole thing, that's what I'm thinking is, if it's free, people typically don't take advantage of it as well if they had to put a price tag on it because they feel no value on it.
So,
because that's how they're raised and brought up, just as Dave
was
pointing out.
Yeah,
Do you think that in order for us to really strive and progress, like, we essentially, there has to be a negative repercussion? Like, there has to be winners and losers, like, for the the cream to rise. If
everyone's happy with the same, but again,
then they're not gonna like. So say if we had that, like, mm-hmm. if we didn't have to worry about like our means to an end, like, and it's like, oh, like you got all the time to hone. Like, of course there are gonna be people, because we're all individuals. We all have our own goals, our own priorities. Mm-hmm. There's gonna be people that go, you know what? I don't want to develop my unique skill. I just want to chill.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to do this. So but then the maybe other there has go, to be that, like,
he yo, shouldn't like, get the same because I'm working, he doesn't.
There has to be that, like, survival mechanism mm-hmm. to it. But
isn't that a childish mentality to think, like, well, he's not doing this? And not everyone's going to be like that. And I know if I had everything paid for, I wouldn't sit at home and do anything. And I know that's just me, and there's people who will. But that's fine. I think, you know, as we're talking about positivity and giving stuff away for free, I think if people need access to good quality information that's relying on their health that has big impacts, it should be free. And that's just how I think. And if you don't want to come to it because you don't see the value, that's fine. That's your decision. And there's pros and cons to that. And maybe you have health consequences because of it. But if, Dave, let's say you have health consequences and you really need access to good quality information, and I have it, but you can't afford it, that doesn't do anyone good.
True. And see, I think there is a fine line between that. I actually believe that someone will work harder if they have an issue both with, say, mental, physical, or a nutritional aspect of it. They'll work harder knowing that they actually have to give up something for it. They're sacrificing. We all know, like, if we have to sacrifice, and sometimes it's not always the cake doesn't always feel good at the end of the term, but if we're sacrificing for something, we're going to work a little harder to achieve that particular goal. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying – I agree with you, too, that I wish I could give my information away for free. I wish I could go out on the street and help every individual out there I think is walking improperly. Just go – and, you know, people watch all the time. I see people walking with just – they look like they're in so much pain when they walk. Mm-hmm. I wish I could go up to them and give them an hour of my time and fix them up. But I don't have that convenience at this moment. I wish I could, but I can't. And the reason of it is because, you know, the electric company and the car companies don't just let me have what I have on good faith.
Yeah, but as we were speaking earlier about being realistic in the positive way, but also having that negative feedback loop, part of that negative feedback loop isn't just with economics, it's also with health. So if they are walking improperly or they're in pain, once that pain reaches a threshold that's too much, then that's their negative feedback, and mm-hmm. then they have to seek treatment. So I don't think it's a purely economical thing when we're dealing with health. It's their feedback loop is their negative health, and how motivated they are to put their health as a priority to then seek out treatment. I think the barrier is getting that treatment is in the financial realm is where a lot of people fall short, and unfortunately it's the lower to middle class people who fall short.
I think a lot of them they'll take it as a priority. They're thinking, I'll just go get a pill or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So
because of the society that we live in, which is an instant gratification society.
Yeah.
You deserve the best, you deserve it right now.
Well, and that's the one thing that helps me. Well, not helps me, but helps I think all of us, and you can agree to this, hopefully, is like we were working with the one athlete today, and we told her, hey, you're feeling better, but it's going to take time. And she was receptive. She goes, yeah, I understand. It's going to take time. I've been doing a lot of things improperly, so it's not going to happen overnight. It's the people that are like, I still feel pain. Well, I'm moving better. I'm stronger, but I'm still feeling pain. And I'm like, it's going to take time. Well, why? Why is it taking time? Those are the ones that will never get, I think, in my realm of
but also,
full mobility. And I think with you,
at the same time, they're watching TV, everything on there, or they're reading newspapers. It's telling you, right now, you can feel better.
Reduce pain.
It's as easy as
putting this little thing on and hit a button.
But I think our roles as healthcare professionals is to set those boundaries. That's part of our job. So, and you have to frame the context of the conversation is, say, someone comes to me, and they start changing their dietary habits, and they already had a heart attack, and I say, you didn't get here overnight. It took you 38 years to get to this part where you had a heart attack.
Yeah.
You can't reverse these changes in 1 month of eating healthy or 2 months or even a year. You know, most of the studies show over 3 years it takes to reverse some of these cardiovascular disease.
It's like smoking. If you smoke for 20 years, just because you quit doesn't mean you might not
in a year you're
going to
be fine.
You might have COPD later.
Yeah. So essentially, that's part of your job as a healthcare practitioner is to set those boundaries of like, hey, here's realistic expectation, realistic goals, and this is the time frame that you can hope to achieve this goal. Whether they take that or not, or listen to it or follow it, that's out of your control, and it's up to them, but you have to set that context. Yeah.
Like I told her, it's like, you know, you have all these issues that are lingering, and she's like, well, can we start them? Well, I really can't, because you're leaving for competition in a week. We're not going to get enough done before then.
Yeah.
Because, to be honest, for us to really work on your dysfunctions, you're going to have to stop what you're doing for a while.
Yeah, because we talked to her. We said, like, hey, I knew, too. I was like, how many times are you working out a day?
Three
times a day. And then she has a very active, like, job that she does in the evening.
Literally, so, almost four times a day, then.
So you're working out four times a day. You're lucky in the first three that they're probably only, like, an hour or so each, but they're very intense. And then the job, you might be there between, like, 2 and 8 hours. Who knows? You're doing that. It just constant, like, you're in a constant state of, like, tension and fatigue.
And no rehab. So you can't
fix that. Yeah.
And that's why I try to hint to her. I was like, well, we'll work on this when you're done with your competition.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, what can I do now? I'm like, just these little things right now, just so we can actually hopefully mask the pain.
Yeah, so you can competition. Kind of, like, because right now you're not going to perform at your best, but if we can help, like, address them as much as we can, you'll perform a little better.
And then once you're done, then we can fix them, because it's going to take 6 weeks to actually fix it. And one of the first things we're going to do is reduce the amount of activity she has.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that just reminded me of a concept to reel back towards the positive and negative side of the topic of what path are you going down right now? Are you going down a more negative path, or are you changing your life and your inner dialogue to a more positive path?
Yeah.
And I think the first step to figuring that out is recognizing first what's going on in your head, or what's going on with your life and your emotions and your actions. Say, is this a positive thought, emotion, or action, or is this a negative one?
Yeah.
Or am I have a mixture that's 60-40 or whatever it may be? Because you're not going to be 100% one way or 100%
right.
the other.
Well, with her right at the moment right now, I'm trying to be as positive as possible. Oh, we're doing good. Things are working well. And then as soon as she's done with her competition, it's going to be like, okay, you suck. You can't move well. Let's refix you, because now we can actually build her down, break her down physically and build her back up again. Now we don't have the convenience of it, because she leaves in 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we have that much time, because it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
It will take a good 6 weeks to get her moving to the point where she feels powerful, feels she's strong, everything is working as efficiently as she could, and then she'll be a better athlete afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes time.
Yeah, and just as I put in the email with the, you know, how I didn't want to work with her because her fight was 10 or 1 month out.
Yeah, it's like not enough time.
We're not going to start a new nutrition regimen that you're 4-2 and don't grasp fully in 1 month and you have a fight. I need 3 months to even see where you're at, how your body reacts to it, fine-tune it, make sure you're firing all cylinders, and then go do it. And again, it's one of my rants about meal plans and how someone can just guess exactly how your body's going to react to it. Eat these and you're good to go.
You're fine.
Give me 200 bucks.
Yeah.
And that's the
thing. Asparagus is the super vegetable.
Yeah. I don't know your genetics.
Yeah.
But I'm going to guess how your body reacts.
Let's assume I'm telling you to eat Brussels sprouts and kale and everything. It turns out you can't really digest cruciferous vegetables very well.
Mm-hmm.
Big word.
Right, yeah, I know about that.
And see, that's the thing. I guess that's the negative side of capitalism in the health industry. Because a lot of people in your industry be like, oh, here's $200, give me the thing, I'll give you a meal plan for the month.
Mm-hmm.
And on my side of it, they'll have taken an athlete and said, oh, you're having these issues? We can fix you real quick. I just need to see you every day, you know, an hour a day. It's going to cost you this much. We'll get you feeling great.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, I know biomechanically that can't happen.
That's an idealistic positivity.
That may be too far, like, away from reality.
Yeah.
Or they know it's too far from reality and they're just a bad
and,
person.
Yeah, their priorities aren't the same as us, as far as, like, we want people to move well, be the best human being they can possibly be. Like, a very realistic goal, rather than just like, oh, I just want to make money. Like,
but see, Brad knows and I know. Brad knows he can give someone a nutrition plan and that will help him for the month. And I know I can work with this person for the next week every day and I can make them better. But the results will be very small.
Mm-hmm.
And the timeline of success is going to be very small.
Mm-hmm.
We know for it to actually last correctly, the length we want to correct it, it's going to take a while. And you and I both agree on this one. I think this is why I refer as many people as I can to you, is I don't want to work with you the rest of your life. My
right.
job is to teach you as much as I can, so if when I'm not around, you can still succeed in this realm.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to work with me, I'm more than happy to. But you're doing that on a choice matter, not because you have to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you kind of feel the same way.
And it's just like you have counseling for mental health people. It's not that you need to see them every day or every week or every month, but sometimes you need checks and balances, and you just check in and say, okay, I was on this right path, going down this right road, and just need to check in. Same thing with nutrition counseling. Maybe you need to meet frequently with me at the beginning because you don't have the right information, and then you get the
foundation.
You don't have the foundation, and then you get that foundation, and then you meet a little bit less frequently, and you start getting into it.
Just to make sure you're on the right path.
Yeah, and then you start having plateaus and pitfalls, and you check in and overcome that, but then you get to a point where you don't need that, and maybe you need to check in once a quarter, or once a year, or not, maybe even not at all, and you get it, and you can help with other people, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I don't want to work with you for the rest of your life. That means I'm not doing a great job in myself. And then ultimately, if I help you and we're at the same gym, you're a better athlete. You can push me and be a better competitor. And
absolutely.
I, in turn, can be a better athlete. So it's, again, co-evolving. Trademark.
Trademark.
And then when I see an athlete saying, now, I'm talking a competitive athlete, so the ones that are actually competing today. When I spoke with you, like, I'd like you to meet with a lot of the golfers before they go back to school, mm-hmm. I would like you to meet and speak to them, just, you know, similar how you talk with the fighters about hydration and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to a normal everyday athlete, which is someone that doesn't compete regularly, I can do the simple, like, you know, this is some of the stuff you should be eating. They don't have any huge dietary needs. And I'm assuming with you, the same thing, if somebody asks you that's not a huge competitor, you could help them in the fitness mm-hmm. aspect of it. But when it comes to somebody where their nutrition is their fuel sense and they need it to compete well, I know better. Mm-hmm. I know better than trying to say, like, you know what, I can help, but this guy can help you better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people miss that, and some people say it's a negative thing. Some people have told me before, and I've talked to other fitness professionals saying, you know, I'm doing this nutrition thing, I'm doing this nutrition cert, I'm doing this nutrition cert, so when an athlete comes to me, I can give them this nutrition plan, and I'm making more money off nutrition, I can make nutrition, and then fitness, and then rehab, and this, and this, and this. I have all these certifications. And I'm thinking, okay, I see that on the financial aspect, it helps. And people ask me, what do I do for nutrition? I said, if it's a normal, everyday athlete, I give them simple dietary needs. But if it's someone that actually needs real nutrition.
If
they have.
That's like, going to make or break you, essentially.
Right. If they have an issue where they, you know, not they want to lose like 5 or 6 pounds, but they want to lose like 40 pounds. Or they need to get ready for a competition where their food is their prime source of, you know, that's it. They need good food. I'm not going to joke around with it and be like, oh, I know everything. I defer away to someone that's better than I am mm-hmm. at it. And so many people say, well, that's not very good. You should be smarter than that. I don't look at it as a negative thing in my aspect, but they look at it as I'm throwing money away. And I'm looking at it as I'm helping the individual the best I know how.
That's a priority thing.
And to me, that's the positive thinking of it. I can sit there and tell an athlete or tell somebody, like, hey, I can help you with, you know, 100 different things or 99 different things. But this one thing, this person's better at me at, you need to go with them. And they trust me enough that they think, okay.
That's when it comes to priorities, though. Like you're prioritizing your client's health and well-being. The other people, they're prioritizing themselves making money.
But also,
you're always going to have that conflict.
And some of those people might not even be doing it maliciously. If they go take a test and get a certification over, let's say, 3 months.
Yeah, they have proof. They were told. They're qualified
exactly.
to give this advice.
So they don't know what they don't know. So if you study nutrition 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, whatever it may be, the more you progress through school, the more, and this has not to do with nutrition, this has to do with science, the more you learn about it, the more you realize you don't know about it and the unknown. You start scratching away at the surface, and maybe you're told 1 + 1 = 2, but then you start studying more and more math, and you realize how much things are theoretical. Then you're like, oh, shoot, I can guide you in the best direction, but there's so much we don't know. These trainers don't know that.
Yeah.
They have no concept. They probably have never even heard the word nutrigenomics. They don't know what it means.
It was the first time I've heard that word.
And essentially, they're not understanding how food influences your gene expressions, turning on epigenomics, turning that on and off, and how that's changing your genes, essentially. So for me to give you a meal plan, I have no idea what your genes are, nor do I know how your genes are going to react to the food I'm
which
telling you.
Which is why
to eat.
You personally need to go through like that assessment period, yes. Which is a little longer. Like, okay, Dave, like, what'd you eat? How'd you react? How'd you feel? Blah, blah, blah. And then you could kind of get a better
yeah.
grasp on it.
Exactly. So they're probably not even aware of that concept, let alone the standards of dietary guidelines where you start out in sports nutrition. And it's not the end-all, be-all like people think. If you just take a certification, like, oh, I'm going to look up the Academy of Nutrition Dietetic Standards for this and protein range and carbohydrates, but then they think, here's that, I give them this meal plan, that's it. That's the starting point, but since they've had 1 month or 3 months and not years and years of experience, they don't know that that's the very first starting point, not the end point, and you can see essentially how that they're just making money and not and having the health and fitness and performance at the forefront.
That also proves like how little as a society we know about nutrition, how little attention we're paying, like,
mm-hmm. and we have such a big problem because
you have
ironic.
Those people making mm-hmm. making a like a living
mm-hmm.
off of just knowing the surface level stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and see, they're not taking advantage of people. It's just like they know, they think they know more. Like they sit there and like, oh crap, I know all this crap, and then you, someone who has studied for a decade or longer. Sits there and look back, you go, yo, you're only at the tip of the iceberg right now.
Yeah,
like,
that's scary.
And then society, they're just floating. They're on a door like Leonardo DiCaprio, just about to drown.
Exactly. But they don't know. Their ego thinks that they know a lot because that's certification. And even when you get degrees and certification, advanced credentials, you're like, whoa, there's a lot that I don't know or we don't know as a society. But it is ironic that we have such this epidemic and problem, but we don't know a whole lot. Nor is this information being well received by a lot of people. They just
right.
want that meal plan and go on their day.
It's still evolving.
Well, I agree. Mm-hmm. And I base my knowledge basis on, I mean, I don't know everything when it comes to the, you know, sports science and, you know, exercise physiology, but I know a fair amount. So if I don't know a subject as much as I know that, then I'm not going to tell an individual that much information about it. Again, you know probably as much or more information I know on the exercise physiology side. So when someone asks me a serious question about, I need to lose this much weight for this, or I need to know what foods I need to consume to perform better at this level, I can't say eating kale and spinach and chicken is going to be your best bet.
Yeah.
Because, again, I don't know internally what your body really going to need. But if you say, I need to lose a few pounds, okay, well, put the fork down. I mean, I can help you lose a little bit of weight, but if you need your food to fuel you to become a better athlete, I mean, that's where I draw the line. And
that's all, like,
that's because you know that
all of this centers essentially around like those realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one thing to be positive, but
yeah.
asking questions is not a bad thing.
Absolutely not.
Not knowing answers isn't a bad thing.
No, but right. everybody finds it as a if you ask someone a question, someone's like, they said, do you know this? And they're like, well, no. They're like, well, you should. It's like, why?
But you don't, those people aren't in, they can't be in the science field. If they are in the science field, and I think, you know, obviously exercise science is a science field, then you should know that. And that leads me to believe you don't have a degree in that, and maybe you just have a certification.
A weekend certification
yes.
that costs you $500.
Yes, exactly. Because you can't be deep in the science field and be a matter of fact about things. Yes, there are truth and falses on certain subjects, but the more complex you get into it, the more theoretical it becomes.
Well, I've heard people tell me all the time, like, how do you know so much? I'm like, well, it sounds pretty narcissistic, but it sounds pretty ego. But I'm saying, like, people ask me, like, how do you know this? Where have you learned this? And my thing is, like, school? And I'm like, that's where I learned it. And I learned it in school. I learned it hands-on stuff, working in the hospitals, working in the clinicals and the labs and stuff. That's where I learned it.
And
people are like, where do I learn that? Well, where can I learn this? School.
Yeah, and keep in mind, the things that you learned in school from those textbooks are also evolving and
mm-hmm.
changing and being, items are being deleted and replaced with
yeah.
newer, more updated information as we know more.
Well,
just
math,
because it's...
Just look at math, it's changed. Like, mm-hmm. what's the new, like...
Oh, I don't know.
I forget that the whole, like, that new kind of...
Curriculum of math.
Way they're teaching it.
Don't know.
But I forget what it's called, but I know there was, like, an issue with that. Like, so essentially the way we learn math is not how you're learning
mm-hmm.
math now. Like, but that's changed. And I mean, you have people, like, researching and stuff, you know, like, this is a better way to learn it.
Or we didn't have this technology, and this is very is very common in healthcare. We didn't have this technology, and we found out what we were doing is actually hurting people. So let me give you perspective real quick. It's slightly off topic. But in the 70s, when you're giving intravenous nutrition to people, there were gold standards. The best top-of-line researchers said, give X amount of this, this much copper, this much micronutrients, and this will help with this and reduce mortality, morbidity rates. And then 10 years, 15 years down the line, they're like, oh, that cutting-edge technology and the best standards was actually helping kill people. And that is very common in healthcare where you think essentially the world is flat and then you get technology like, oh, no, it's round. Uh-oh. And there's a paradigm shift in thinking. It's very common. Yeah. So when we think of science of, no, this is true because of science, well, you know, that doesn't,
it's like, wait, not always true. The sun doesn't orbit us? We orbit the sun?
We're what not the hell? Center of the galaxy?
Holy crap. Oh, my God.
Well, that can be used in today's ideas right now.
Put a helmet on because you just blew my mind.
Yeah. With the whole big thing with CrossFit. You know, people talk about CrossFit is the end-all, be-all of all fitness. I'm like, well, CrossFit's been around for, or not CrossFit itself, but that type of training's been around for a while. It's just, instead of, the whole idea is, you know, that interval training or the HIIT programming, mm-hmm. going as hard as you can, as fast as you can.
High intensity.
Training. Mm-hmm. CrossFit just added Olympic movements with that. And, you know, I was always brought up thinking, we train not to get hurt. We train so we can perform better on the competition field and stay on the field and not get hurt. CrossFit's idea is, you train, if you get hurt, you keep going, kind of thing. And their idea is like, oh, I got hurt training in CrossFit. I'm thinking you shouldn't do that. But the whole theory has changed is CrossFit's awesome. Everything else is just secondary. And they're thinking it's something new and wonderful. It's not. It's not new and wonderful. And they're going to find out later on that, yeah, doing CrossFit or training in one plane movements, maybe it'll make you ripped. Because you look at CrossFit, most of the athletes are built very well. They're cut. I mean, we went to that CrossFit competition. Most of them they're built well, but they don't move well at an athletic performance because CrossFit's basically one movement.
Yeah, they can't adapt very well in multi-plane movement.
They move well in one plane, and as an athlete, we need to move multiple planes. Yeah. But
I'd say probably some of the best are combat athletes.
Yeah.
As far as, like, being able to adapt, being able to move in multiple planes. Mm-hmm. Like,
but you hear a lot of combat athletes, they do CrossFit, and then all of a sudden,
they're hurt.
They have to drop out of their fight because they hurt their knee, they hurt their ankle, they hurt their shoulder because of training. It's like...
doing WADs.
We're getting
What's WAD even stand for?
And that's the thing is people... And I hear all the time, and it's not the same thing that you said, but more athletes are getting hurt. Both professional athletes, amateur athletes, they're getting hurt, both in high school, college, and at the upper level. And they're like, oh, they're getting hurt because they're bigger, they're faster, and stronger. And when I hear that, I'm thinking, that sounds so stupid.
As a society, we should have evolved to a point where, like, our training regimen should be top of the line by now.
Yeah.
But why were we not getting, like, these injuries back in the 40s, back in the 50s?
And the theory is, well, the athletes weren't bigger, they weren't faster, they weren't stronger. And I hear that, I'm thinking, so the athletes are bigger, faster, and stronger.
So our training should have evolved to account for that.
Well, no, the fact that they're that bigger, faster, and stronger, they shouldn't get hurt as much.
True.
But they're saying, well, they're getting hit by bigger guys. They're getting hit by guys that are faster and stronger. Okay, well, if I'm a little smart car and I get hit by a semi, okay, it's not going to work well. But if I'm a semi and he's a semi,
let's assume force? In the 40s you had two smart cars, like,
boop, hitting each other.
Well, you should have been both about the same build. Like, there should have been the same injuries, really. Like, if you're dealing with the same size people, there should have been those same injuries. But we're having these new injuries, like, and a lot of them are non-contact injuries.
And there it is right there, the non-contact injury thing. And this goes back to the positive-negative feedback. Is I think I've showed you both the picture of RG3 when he's doing his vertical leap where his knees are basically hitting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I told people all the time, kind of, this is a valgus movement.
We saw someone jumping like that a couple weeks ago, and like I just cringed.
Yeah, it's a negative movement pattern, which basically puts a lot of strain on the knee, which if you rotate incorrectly, the knee's going to go. So you're asking for a non-contact injury. And I said, no, this is done wrong. And everybody asked me, like, well, why do you do that? Well, probably because he's been around so many people saying how great he is because he was a phenomenal athlete. I mean, he was probably the most talented athlete coming out of that draft. And like, you're so good, you're so good, you're so good. And everyone was afraid to tell him, dude, you're not that great. Afraid for what the repercussions would be financially, because if I'm some phenomenal athlete and someone says, dude, you're not that great. Well, I have 10 guys telling me I'm good.
You're one voice out of 10. Yeah. You must be wrong.
Exactly. And I think that's the big issue we're falling into is the positive and negative feedback. I think some people do negative feedback because it empowers them. It makes them feel more important, saying, you know what, you're not doing a good job to my standard. Yeah. And it makes them kind of makes that person work harder for me. And then the positive side is I'm going to give this guy positive reinforcement to make him like me, even though I know he's doing something wrong. I think that's the big issue that when it comes to athletes, both coaches and students, there's no fine line.
And I think where the rubber meets the road to rope the conversation in is you have that negative feedback when a lot of money is spent on these high-end athletes and they keep getting injured. So they're going to have to keep having this happen until one of the owners is like, enough is enough. We've lost so many high-end athletes and lost so much money to injuries. Let's get a movement specialist in here to fix this and make sure this doesn't happen. But there has to be attrition or loss in order for that to happen. There has to be that negative feedback.
Until later. Until it's too late.
And essentially, that's what's happened as a nation with our nutrition status, where we keep trending back toward bad ways and being more obese, dying more of heart disease and respiratory issues and other things. And until we hit a rock bottom and say, enough is enough, we need a paradigm shift, let's go the other direction, you're not going to have it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen just overnight, so it's an ongoing process of having these atrocities and deaths, and we have to learn from it.
Yeah, true.
So we're coming up to the hour, so and we kind of went up and down,
kind of bounced around, but like I think what my big takeaway was, I mean, everything, whether it be positivity, negativity, moderation is really the key, and realistic expectations. Those SMART goals, like Brad, mm-hmm. like you've been mentioning that since about a year ago, you know, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely.
Mm-hmm.
Moderation for all things, including moderation.
And my take is when it comes to a positive and negative feedback is, as an athlete, know who's giving you that feedback. Are they doing it to motivate you, or are they doing it to break you down?
Yeah.
Coming from the coach, does the athlete take it as a positive thing? When you give them negative, are you doing it to build them up, or are you breaking them down? It's that fine line. You have to kind of know where it's coming from and who you're giving it to. Mm-hmm. That's my best report to that one.
Yeah, and I think from a personal level, I would rather have a mostly positive inner dialogue and self-talk to elicit positive emotions, but not be numb to negative feedback that's ultimately going to drive my evolution in getting better as a person and just becoming better.
So, mm-hmm. Dave?
Right there.
All right, sign us off.
Ha ha ha! Good show!